welcome to Cinematica.
Thanks, very, very nice to be here.
Excellent to have you in town, and what a magnificent occasion we're looking forward to this afternoon. The world premiere of The Hobbit. Of course, here in Wellington we're used to world premieres. We had one for The Return of the King a few years ago, so it'll be interesting to see how many of the local population get excited or are blasé about yet another red carpet parade. Tell us a bit about your involvement in The Hobbit and why you're in town specifically for this event.
Right. Well, I co-founded and I am CEO of a company called Real D. And if you've seen a 3D movie over the last 7 or so years, hopefully you've seen it in Real D. It's we think the best way to see a motion picture, the most real, the most lifelike way. And so we're very excited to be associated with The Hobbit because The Hobbit will be playing on Real D. And since we are the largest 3D platform in the world, more than likely, if your listening audience goes and sees the film, they'll see it in Real D.
Tell me a little bit about your background with 3D technology. What was the first 3D movie that you saw?
It was actually House of Wax, which was the 1950s version with the old red and green glasses. I promise you that is not what we're doing today with Real D. In fact, until recently, I think most people, that's what they thought of when they thought of 3D films. How I got into 3D was back in the 90s, I produced a couple of movies in 3D in IMAX. And I just fell in love with the process. What was clear to me was that if 3D is done really well, it's like you're there, and it really engages you. And so I was determined to figure out how I could get high-quality 3D to the masses. And starting in 2003, we started to look at who was doing 3D technology, and what we discovered was that it was being used by science and industry, from designing aircraft, automobiles, NASA, the military have used 3D for a very long time, and so we started to use that same science in developing our cinema systems. And so today, Real D is technology that we license to theaters so that when you go in, you can put on Real D glasses and see a 3D movie.
I remember those IMAX 3D movies from the 90s, and that was also my exposure to the modern quality of it. I saw one which was set in New York City and involved stereographed vintage photographs and being transformed, and that just blew my mind. But that technology in those days, the glasses were enormously heavy and they were kind of tethered, weren't they, to the seat? They were getting sort of shutter messages from sort of a central computer somewhere. What do you feel was the big leap that got you away from the heaviness, the feeling that you were sort of under this sort of helmet, to the Real D technology, which are almost like Ray-Bans?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the stereograph, because that's sort of where it started. If you look at 3D technology, it goes back about 150 years. That was the earliest interpretation of trying to replicate the way we see in real life. And we've gone through some technological advances since then. Obviously, the red and green glasses in the 50s. What we looked at doing was using that technology that had been used in other industries and then applying it to cinema systems in theaters. And specifically, our mandate was to make it as easy and as simple for exhibitors to install, and also to make it as comfortable as possible. That's been one of the challenges with 3D in the past. Either the viewing experience wasn't particularly good, or the comfort factor on the glasses was pretty tough after about an hour or so. So we decided that we were going to figure out how do you make it feel like sunglasses, put them on simple, and I think we've achieved that. After a few minutes, you forget you're wearing specs at all, and you just really fall into the movie and feel like you're there.
Yeah. One of the big technology challenges in the past seemed to be the double projectors, the trying to synchronize them. How important has it been that real 3D works with a single projector system a lot of the time.
Yeah. So one of the things that we know that if you use two projector systems, one of the challenges is getting those projectors perfectly synchronized. And again, it goes back to the simple and easy. In the case of Real D, if a exhibitor has a digital projector, we can go in and upgrade that projector in literally about an hour. It includes a screen, it's the eyewear, and it's a shuttering device that fits very easily on the front of the projector. And what we're able to do now with digital technology is we're able to alternate left and right eyes very, very quickly. In the case of 3D, 144 times a second. And we can do that on a single projector. So that has a lot of advantages. Obviously, first of all, it's cost. And then secondarily, what we found through our studies is if you have two projectors, then you're going to have drift and you're going to have issues. And they won't be perfectly synchronized. That's why a single projector system is better.
There are a lot of competing 3D formats now. Back in the early days of digital, your company were pioneers, and now there's a lot of people sort of jumping on the bandwagon with competing formats. Does that mean that individual films have to be mastered separately for each format? I'm not sure what the producers of a film have to do in order to make a film Real D ready, for example.
It's pretty easy, really. All they have to do is have a left and right eye image. So it's essentially two movies that they're making. There are two parts of the equation. The first part is really how you capture the movie. And that capturing process can happen either through using a stereo rig, meaning two cameras, a left camera and a right camera. In some cases, they use conversion technologies where the existing film is then converted into 3D in post-production. So where Real D comes into play is once there is a left master and a right master, that's where we take over and we're able to use our technology in cinemas to get it to your eyeball. The process is pretty easy, and no, you don't need a specific format. So once a movie is made, it can play on Real D or it can play on these other formats. Now, we do supply technology to the directors on set and various parts of the chain because Real D is the most widely used technology in the world. We have about 22,000 screens, and more than likely, if they produce their film, they want to see how it's going to be seen by most of the audience around the world.
I watched the most recent Hobbit video diary that Peter Jackson produced, and he was showing the post-production process of The Hobbit, and the effects guys and the digital intermediate guys, they're all sort of sitting there with their glasses on because you have to be able to see it as the public will see it. Have you and your company been involved in supporting that part of the process
yes.
as well?
Yeah, most of the major filmmakers in the world, including Peter Jackson, have Real D systems that they use either on the set or to look at dailies in post-production, and we support that effort. The other effort that obviously we've been doing since we started the company was more of being an evangelist for 3D. A lot of the directors were very intrigued using this technology to tell their stories in a very different way, but in many cases, maybe they were not so sure how they would use the technology or thought that it might create some issues in terms of time or process, thought it might negatively impact the creative process. So what we try to do is spend time with the filmmakers and their supporting technology folks and say, you know what, this technology is evolving very quickly, and capture and post technologies are becoming quite easy to use. And I think we're seeing that in a broadening of the types of films that are using 3D. When we first started, we were an animated platform primarily. Then we went to genre films. Then we went to films like Avatar, big budget live-action films. Now fantasy films with The Hobbit. And then most recently, of course, Life of Pi, which is out now in the States. And then I don't think a few years ago that anybody would have suspected that a film like Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby would have been in 3D. So pretty exciting time right now.
And even grizzled old veterans like Roger Ebert, who had been very anti 3D from the very beginning, and thinking that, you know, complaining that it's a fad and it's just a way to bilk audiences out of even more money. Even he's coming around to the idea that 3D could actually be an artistic, a method of artistic expression.
Yeah, this medium has sort of been built brick by brick, and I would say, I actually just read that review. It's funny you bring that up. I just read that review today from Roger Ebert on Life of Pi, and there have been holdouts. There were a lot more when we first started. There are fewer now, but I feel like we're making a lot of progress. And I think the bottom line for people is that it's not about 3D. It's really just about making the experience better and more real and lifelike. It's another tool that storytellers and directors use to make a great film. And when you have filmmakers like Ridley Scott and Jim Cameron and Martin Scorsese all using this and saying, and most of them, if not all of them, saying, I'll never go back to 2D. And if I had the opportunity to use this technology before on my previous films, I would have used it. So that's what's exciting for us. It's like the early days of Hollywood. It's like 1920s Hollywood, where people are trying to figure out how to cut and pan. Well, now you're using 3D technology.
It's a different leap, even from the leap from black and white to color, isn't it? It's a very different experience watching a movie in 3D. I remember watching my very first one. I think was the first documentary I saw was the U2. Concert movie, and that was I'm amazed that nobody's brought that back, actually, because there was hardly any places that could show it when it first was released, and I'm sure lots of people would be into it now if they brought that back. But Beowulf was the first film that I saw. It's a pretty awful movie, but I remember sitting there thinking, wow, the rest of the cinema's disappeared, and it was the most involved that I've been at the movies since maybe I was a kid, you know. And it's like, great, all the talkers and the yappers and the fidgeters and all the people that annoy you in a picture theatre, they're just not there anymore, because it's just the picture up front. What do you love about 3D? What's your favourite aspect of it?
I think that ability to, filmmaking is about suspending disbelief and taking you to a different place. And I think 3D magnifies that capability. It takes you to a place that you can't normally go, and whether that's in a movie theater, or in the case of the U2 film that you mentioned, putting you on stage with U2 and Bono. It's interesting you bring that up. That film, we were actually there in Cannes when they showed that film for the first time. The U2 played on the steps of the Palais, which is the main theater there in Cannes, played three songs, then 2,500 people went inside to watch the movie. It was a Saturday night, the opening night of Cannes, and it was really interesting. It was sort of one of those moments for me when I knew we were on the right path, because while the movie, in this case the 3D concert film, was being played, people were acting as if they were at a concert. They were holding up their cell phones, they were using the light and so forth, like you do at a concert. And I think people had forgotten that they were watching a film, because it was so real. And then at the end of it, there was a call for an encore. And of course, you know, the band wasn't coming back. It had only been filmed once. There weren't multiple endings. So that was a proof point that this was going in the right direction, because people had forgotten that they weren't at a concert. That film was also instrumental. Baz Luhrmann came in and viewed it in my theater in 2008. And I think it was the first time that he had ever really seen 3D. And I could just sort of see his mind going and thinking about what he would do. And so I'm really excited to see Great Gatsby next summer.
Something else about that U2 movie that I haven't seen repeated by anybody else was the directors actually using multiple images on different planes, rather than sort of cutting from and using an individual shot to have depth or to poke out at you or what have you. There would be maybe three blended images at different angles, and I just thought that was the most brilliant showcase of the potential of 3D to do things that cinema hasn't ever done before. And I'm wondering whether that not enough people, I think, have realised that there's that potential as well.
Yeah, I think where 3D really excels is directors that understand layers and the proscenium arch. And I think this is why Baz... You're killing us here.
So we'll cut that out.
So proscenium arch.
Yeah. Let me just start over here. I think the directors that are successful, that really understand layers, and Baz Luhrmann, for instance, comes from a Broadway background, and so clearly understands staging and where objects should be in space, and that's the directors that really understand that are the ones that can really utilize the 3D, the volume of where you can put objects in, and how you can develop and use emotion and the 3D technology to really drive a story home.
And not just the story, but if you think of Peanut, Wim Wenders' film, where there was almost no narrative there to hook into, but it was just pure aesthetics.
Just immersing yourself in an environment. The film that I co-produced, a film called T-Rex, and what was interesting was when we got the audience responses back, the cards back, I figured that the 3D, we asked them what were the specific 3D moments that they were most impacted by, and I figured, well, it'd be the T-Rex coming out at the audience or so forth, and it was actually the scene where the girl is just walking through the forest, and there's not, the camera isn't really moving, there's not a lot going on, but you're just sort of taking in this very beautiful environment, and some of the simplest scenes in 3D are the best. It doesn't necessarily have to always be about things coming out at you.
I love this is based on the idea of immersion and realism you're talking about, and obviously the big thing with The Hobbit is the 48 frames, the higher frame rate. How much do you think that's going to impact upon what you're doing with the 3D technology?
Well, where we were 3 years ago is not where we are now, and 3 years from now we'll be at a different place technologically. That's sort of the foundation of our company, is to continually to innovate. And we want to perfect the visual image and make the image as real and lifelike as possible. And 3D is certainly an element of that. But we see this technology is constantly evolving. And we focused on areas like light. We want to get a lot of light on the screen. Our technology has the most light relative to the other companies that provide 3D technology. High frame rate is sort of another evolution in perfecting that image and making it better. A higher frame rate allows more information to be seen by the eye. It's obviously in 48 frames. We have double the amount of information that we have with 24, which is standard film speed. And the fact is that 3D benefits greatly because some of the effects that you have at a lower frame rate, strobing and so forth, go away at a higher frame rate. So the fact is that if the audience has an opportunity to see it at a high frame rate, I would highly recommend it. It will be a more comfortable and a more real, lifelike experience at this higher frame rate.
When Peter Jackson played an extract from The Hobbit, a sort of incomplete extract at one of the movie conferences a while ago in 48 frames, there was a bit of negativity, there was a bit of pushback. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think, number one, it wasn't a completed film. And I think every new technology always meets resistance, I think, just instinctively by most people. If you look back at the history of everything from sound to color, there were people that when color first came out said that wasn't cinematic, that wasn't a way to tell a story. You couldn't tell a story properly without black and white. 3D, we've certainly had that experience where they're very negative towards 3D, and I think as time has gone on, people realize that, you know, it's a pretty great experience. And I think high frame rate is a new thing, and so there will be some analysis of it, and we'll see how people respond. But I would guess over time that this is where the medium is going to go, that cinema has to get better. It has to be the best way to see a piece of content, a movie. Otherwise, you would just sit at home and watch on your television or on your tablet. So
I was going to ask you actually about the speed of uptake of home 3D, and it certainly seems to have happened a lot faster than I was expecting, and it's probably happened a lot faster than cinema owners were hoping for as well. Do you see that from your position in the industry, is that is the technology being welcomed by home users to the same extent that perhaps the makers of televisions lead us to believe?
I think the our view is we play in both areas. We license technologies to consumer electronics companies, and again, for us, it's about making every visual display device better and more real, more lifelike. Cinema, though, I think has to be at the top of the food chain technologically, and that experience should always be better than watching something on your tablet or your phone. In terms of the adoption of 3D, it has been faster, actually, than HD in terms of the numbers. However, I still think we're in the very, very early days. It's not... there's not enough content out there to watch, even though there is some progress being made from sports to movies. It's not as simple as it should be to watch 3D programming. And the devices, the eyewear and so forth, I think needs some work. But I think over time that certainly all visual display devices are going to go this way. And probably the most important thing that needs to happen in the home is it needs to be glasses free. In other words, it needs to be auto stereo technology. And that's a few years away in order for it to be really, really good. It's available now, but it's not great.
So is Real 3D working on auto stereo displays or technology?
We are. Real D has been working on it for a number of years. A few years ago, I would have said it's 5 to 10 years away in order for it to be great. Great from the standpoint of the same impact that we have with audiences now in cinema. But I'm happy to say that I think that timeline is being condensed, and stay tuned on that.
My brain may not be big enough to really fully appreciate this, but I can't quite actually work out how that would even work technically. Like, I don't even how would that work without some kind of device?
Well, that's,
or you opening one eye and closing one eye yourself manually.
Yeah, I think Arthur C. Clarke said, the science fiction novelist said there's no difference between great technology and magic.
Yeah.
And so we'll just leave it at that. that's the magic that the scientists that work at our company come up with every day to make this stuff better. But it's moving in the right direction. I think we're in a very dynamic and exciting time right now, and I think the consumer is going to be blown away by with what they see, not only in cinema, but also these devices in the future.
You mentioned just before other potential content sources for home and, I guess, in cinema and exhibition as well, things like sports or the equivalent of the live opera sessions that people are doing. Do you feel like the other content providers are getting up to speed with what they need to do? Because their method of televising an event would have to be very different to allow for the different experience of 3D.
Well, if we're speaking specifically about cinema, we've been doing a lot of experimentation. We actually finance and produce with Royal Opera House two operas last year or so. And what we see is an ability with digital technology now to sort of reimagine or recreate the whole cinema experience. Right now, it's primarily where you go into a theater and you watch a movie. And that hasn't changed really in 100 plus years, right? You're still projecting an image on a screen. But now with digital, we can program those theaters just like we program a TV station. So you can watch opera, you can watch sports, you can certainly watch films. But the exciting thing to us is, what will that environment look like 5 years, 10 years from now? Will it be configured in the same way? Will we watch the same type of programming? Is it more of a communal environment where we just, experience different types of events? I'm not sure it necessarily has to be movies. And going back to the point earlier, the opportunity to take a person and put them in a place that they normally can't go opens up a lot of options.
And you said earlier that you also help for technologies for NASA and is it military applications as well? Did that idea of taking people places they can't go otherwise, is that key to it?
When we started the company, we were looking for technology that we could build on that would allow us to get 3D to the masses. And we were pretty convinced that it had to be digital in order to correct the issues that had plagued 3D for a very long time. And then we were also looking for, how science had used 3D technology. And we ended up sort of marrying digital projection systems with the 3D science that had been used in the past. And that was the genesis of the Real D system.
Yes, there was one of the scientific technologies closely related to magic that people used to think about were virtual reality, the idea of sticking a helmet on, some goggles and some gloves, and there you were on an alien planet or what have you. Are people still thinking of that as a kind of ultimate involving immersion technology?
Yeah, some of those ideas were popularized in films like Lawnmower Man. And I think 3D is really sort of a stepping stone towards a world like that. I don't think that most people like to have big goggles and big devices around their head, but I think the promise of the ability to direct an image and see an image in any environment as real and lifelike as possible, where the screen sort of disappears, whether it's your handheld device, your tablet, or your movie screen, I think that's where the future is going. And probably the closest word to describe it is holography, or that ability to create images without screens sort of anywhere you are and you want to see an image. So that's where we see the future going.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your company's involvement with The Hobbit. What support did you give Peter Jackson and his team over the years that they've been developing this project?
Right, so we supply them with the technology, the screening room technology, the ability to see the 3D images, and the premieres around the world where our whole team is making sure that there are no fuss-ups. And we do that with all the filmmakers that showcase their movies at premieres and press screenings and so forth. So we're the delivery. We're the kind of the final piece that gets to the consumer. So that's the part that we participate in.
Right. You this may not be something that you have your finger on, but I know that Peter Jackson is a big fan of gaming technology. It's how he sort of relaxes when he's not on set. And one of his projects that he wasn't able to get off the ground was a cinematic version of Halo. And interactivity is something that he considers to be the next step in terms of immersion. Are you aware of what's going on in terms of those developments, in terms of being able to actually watch something in a cinematic environment and then steer the action somewhere else yourself?
Well, Real D licenses technology to two game companies. We think that gaming clearly will be one of the drivers for seeing 3D on devices outside of cinema. So we think that's sports and gaming, if we had to pick two, those will be the drivers of why you will want to use 3D technologies on your devices. So we're already working with game companies. We think that's over the next 2 to 5 years, it's going to be really, really key to driving the industry forward.
Mm. You got anything else?
I think it's only one last little thing, which is what I guess is exciting about the fact that Real 3D uses the
Real D
uses the passive glasses is that you can configure special ones for special occasions. So there's a lot going around right now. The Hobbit has special Hobbit 3D glasses,
I've got clip-ons.
You got clip-ons?
Because of the specs. So I actually, that's the one of the big bonuses of your technology as opposed to anybody else's, is I actually have my own pair that I carry around with me, and they're much more comfortable than your competing.
Well, thank you. We focus a lot of energy on figuring out how could we make the experience for the user that much more comfortable. And if you look at 3D in the past, that was one of the key complaints, was the eyewear wasn't very comfortable. But at the same time, people wear prescription eyewear, people wear sunglasses, so we're used to wearing eyewear. So if we could get the eyewear to that point, then it really shouldn't be a challenge. And that's what we've done. We've been able to, just like we've engineered the system, we've been able to work on the eyewear, get the prices down, make sure that they fit ergonomically. We have small and different sizes of eyewear, so your kids can wear different eyewear than you do. You have clip-ons, as you mentioned. We now license the brand and the technology to various eyewear manufacturers, so you have your sunglasses that can act as real D glasses, so you can walk into a cinema and see.
Oh, really?
And see. We actually have some over there on the corner that I'll show you. That the various companies are licensing now. So I think that's a trend that you'll see, and not only for cinema, but also for other devices as they become enabled.
That's actually, that would be the ideal scenario for me, would be to have have my ordinary prescription glasses be Real D capable, so that then for me there's almost nothing that I need to worry about. It's just the question of sitting down.
We're starting to work with the eyewear manufacturers now, so that when you go in and get your prescription, there's usually a number of boxes that you check. You want anti-glare, you want these different capabilities, and soon there will be a Real D option on there. You'll be able to check your Real D option. So if you don't like our eyewear that are available in the theaters, you can have your own, and you can have your own fashion statement.
The glasses that you get in the cinemas at the moment, they're sort of semi-disposable, aren't they? You know, I don't know how many customers realise that they could actually take them home.
I take them from here to Scotland and watch movies in Scotland and then bring them back again.
Right, yeah, so the experienced cinema goers like Miriam and myself get it, but I'm wondering whether how many audience members really understand that these things can be reused.
There are different models in different places around the world because exhibitors and distributors work differently. In the U.S. and in some overseas markets, it's a recycle model where you get handed the glasses as part of your ticket price. Ideally, we'd like for people to recycle them and put them in the recycle bins when they exit the theater. But if they don't and they bring them back next time, that's fine too. What we found is that our recycling rate over the years has gone up because at some point when you have 10 or, you know, you've kept 10 or 12 of these pairs at home, maybe you don't need to keep another one.
Yeah.
And so we think that's the best model where people can just return the glasses and recycle. In some countries, though, they just purchase the eyewear and bring them back every time.
Where do you feel the growth is for Real D? We've got... There's a lot of competition in the marketplace now in terms of providers, but there are still, certainly in the New Zealand context, there's still maybe 60% of cinema screens that are still not even digital yet.
Yeah.
So where do you see your company growing?
Right. So Real D has approaching about 22,000 screens now globally. There are about 125,000 screens in the world. So, yes, we do have more screens that can be made Real D. We are dominant in most of the major territories around the globe, including Australia and New Zealand. We're about 80% of the market. So if you go see a film, more than likely it'll be on Real D. The growth areas for us right now are China, which is booming from not only a theater standpoint, but also from a movie standpoint. Russia is a very big growth market, and then Latin America. In terms of the percentage of 3D screens, in most markets that are mature, and I would put Australia, New Zealand, the U.S. in that category, Europe for the most part, 30 to 40% usually of the theaters will have 3D capability. So if you have 10 screens and you'll have 3 or 4 screens, will have 3D. We expect that number will probably move up over the next 3 to 5 years as more content gets produced. Each year we've had a growth in the number of films, and obviously the more films that you have, that's going to drive the adoption of more screens.
Oh, and not just that, but also the distributor's drive to dispose of 35mm as a delivery mechanism. So even with so much digital 2D coming on board, cinemas have to convert, and if they're going to convert, they might as well convert to 3D capable right. at the same time.
They might as well go ahead and upgrade. Yeah. About 70,000 screens now in the world are digital, and I would expect over the next 24 months that you will see most of the major studios will not be releasing their films anymore on film. So it will spur further adoption of digital, and I think 2 years from now we may be looking back at film and saying that's an artifact and very few places are going to be showing celluloid.
Yeah. Using the word screen, that just prompted another question that I was thinking of before, and that is that when we talk about 3D delivery, the projection method and the glasses is only a couple of aspects of the technology, the screen that you actually use. Can you explain the Real D preference for the silver screen?
Yeah, so actually the silver screen is a terminology that was developed a number of years ago. We use a special type of screen in order to polarize the light properly for 3D, and since we started, that screen has gone through a number of changes and improvements. It continues to get better and better, not only in 2D but also in 3D. Actually, today we're showing at the premiere tonight. We're using a new screen that Real D has developed recently. It's still in the beta stage, but one of the things we've been working with Peter Jackson on and his team is helping work through new technologies that we want to use on the delivery side and getting the director feedback. And so tonight is sort of an introduction of this technology, which we expect over the next couple years will start to roll out throughout our platform.
And what are the benefits of the new screen? What advantages does it bring?
Better characteristics from a clarity standpoint, from a light standpoint, from a light distribution standpoint, both in 2D and 3D. So it's just a better image of the bottom line.
This summer, France was talking about banning silver screens because of the light diffusion,
right.
I think. And would this new type of screen get around the problem of what they're trying to get rid of?
Yeah, there's been some discussion about it in France. Real D licenses technology to the three top exhibitors in France, so there's been some discussion about it, but the exhibitors, which at the end of the day, you know, drive the discussion and are the customer, they've been very happy with it, as have been the filmmakers, who's probably even more important. So this is technology that's been accepted worldwide, but it does continue to improve. And, you know, I think a year, 2 years, 3 years from now, this will be a non-discussion. But it has been exclusive to France and no other territory.
It does sound like a very French argument.
But France is a very important territory. We have, their love for film is very strong, and 3D percentages in France relative to 2D is very, very high.
And what sort of take up has there been in the French film industry itself in terms of making films in 3D? Because their industry, they've got. Yeah. Do they still have quotas? For French content.
Yeah, it brings up an interesting point because obviously being from the U.S., we sort of think in terms of studio films that go around the world. But the fact is, in many territories, the content that's showed on cinemas, half of which may be local content, locally produced content. So that's one of the things we've been looking at and seeing more and more local content being produced in 3D and France, China, a lot of these territories are starting to do their own 3D content, which we think is great.
And as we saw with Werner Herzog's Cave of Forgotten Dreams, you can make serviceable, projectable 3D images with domestic 3D equipment nowadays. So it's sort of, but it's happening, right? So it's sort of being democratized to a degree as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's sort of what's happened. Yeah, well, it happened certainly with the introduction of YouTube, right? It used to be that it cost millions of dollars to go out and make a film and then get it distributed, but fact is now that with very simple pieces of technology, you can be seen by millions of people. And I think we're going to see the same thing with 3D technology. When we started, this was only in the hands of the most talented filmmakers and the filmmakers with the most resources. And I think you're going to see a democratization of the use of 3D, not only for cinema, for art house and lower budget films, but also 3D technology on YouTube and all other devices.
And 3D, YouTube does have its 3D channels, so you can watch content.
Right.
I've never. That's another thing. I simply don't. I don't understand how that works. But squinting. I'm done, actually. Do you have any sort of hyper academic questions that you might want to ask that would be useful? Because Miriam's a specialist in 3D technology at Victoria University.
Oh, wow.
So this is an opportunity to get some from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, you guys have asked some very good questions. And questions there's not a question that I haven't heard before, and I've had a few today that I haven't, so it's great.
I might ask a really geeky one. It's too geeky. But I guess one of the claims is that the problem with ghosting is mm-hmm. more often coming through in passive display rather than active display.
Right.
So I guess how important is it that the directors have your technology or other passive display technology when they're filming, so that they realize where ghosting might be coming in, because it's quite an easy thing to reduce, you know.
Well, like everything, the cinematic language has evolved, and so the things that cause ghosting, I think directors have become more and more aware of it, and therefore framing and shooting their pieces to not have as much ghosting. When we started the company, we had Ghostbuster technology, which would go in and correct the image. But as time has gone on, we really use less and less of that because the filmmakers don't really require it.
Yeah.
So we had that sort of automatically built in the system to deal with the passive leakage.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's not really so much the issue because the tools, everything from the production to the delivery has just gotten better. It's gotten easier, simple, you know.
It
better, faster.
Makes such a difference that directors are now seeing that on the monitors on set, because even that's quite recent, really,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Back when I was producing films, we had to shoot it. It was very, very challenging. Big film stock. Then you would have to take the film stock and deliver it to the theater. They would have to put it up on the screen. You'd have to watch it, and it would look different than what you thought you had shot. And so, it's come a long way pretty quickly.
And I guess in a question about your personal involvement in 3D, do you think the movies that you produced in IMAX will get a Blu-ray release?
I think they already have. I think T-Rex has already had. The Magic Box, I think, got one as well, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because I think that the way, when I was thinking about that U2 movie, you know, that when that came out, there was only one 3D screen in Wellington, and it was only, a 220-seat theatre played for a week. I get the feeling that there's a lot of people that would want to go back to a sort of remastered version of T-Rex or to the New York stereograph film that I saw. And I think that there's a lot of potential there to bring those back to life.
I think you're right. And I think I'll pass that along to the filmmakers. I think they should re-release it. It's a great piece of work.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Michael Lewis, thanks very much for your time, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And I hope that everything looks beautiful on the embassy screen tonight.
Thanks very much, and please go see The Hobbit in real D.
Will do. Thanks a lot.